Welcome to Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. I'm Joe Galina. And as always, I'm joined by my buddy, Scott Chu. What's going on there, Scott?
Very little. Just got had a great family vacation. Went to a couple of zoos, Toledo and Columbus.
Nice.
Had a lot of fun. You know, obviously the kid loved it. So do I. I'm like a little kid when I go to the zoo. So I'm doing great, man.
Mm, awesome. Yeah, the zoo, nothing like going to the zoo. Last time I think we were in a zoo was actually the San Diego Zoo, which was really cool. Bronx Zoo. If you ever come to New York, Bronx Zoo is also awesome.
I've heard. And San Diego Zoo is what my son really wants to go to.
But, yeah, because you get to see the pandas, right?
Yeah, I mean, everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? They have everything over
there. So what you do is you do what we did. You get tickets for San Diego Comic-Con. Unfortunately, the Padres were away, but we got to see the stadium through the back. You can actually walk in, and you get to see the field. It's real nice. And, of course, we also went to the San Diego Zoo, which is really awesome as well. But, dog days of August, we're all sweating, right? It's been like in the 90s here in New York, like for several days. A week has passed since the MLB trade deadline. We actually have some news to share, right? Where do we want to start? How about we start with Tim Anderson? We were talking about him right before the show. Has a ligament damage, right? He's going to have surgery. He's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. Didi's out there. Didi Gregorius got DFA'd by the Phillies. But Tim Anderson, big loss for fantasy managers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's a top shelf shortstop. I mean, he takes a little bit of a downgrade in OBP, but nobody cares because he still hits home runs, steals bases. This is pretty tough because this is functionally half of the season. So if you're in playoff mode, this is a really difficult injury. I will say most people just aren't going to have someone better on their IL than Tim Anderson. So, you know, you can't release him. I think you just might get forced into a difficult decision with some other guys who are still on the IL. And then Didi Gregorius's release is actually somewhat interesting from a fantasy perspective because, one, I'm interested to see where he ends up, but two, and how he ends up doing. But I'm also, it was also interesting because I was worried about that crowded Philadelphia infield. And he was going to ultimately share time with Bryson Stott. He and Bryson Stott are both left-handed. Segura's right-handed. So one of them was going to have to sit all the time. But the Phillies fixed that for us by, unfortunately, releasing one of them. He'll probably catch on somewhere, but he's going to be an only league guy once we figure out what league he goes to.
Yeah, unfortunately, not too much going on for the White Sox in terms of replacements for Anderson. We know... Leury Garcia, he's been in the major leagues for a while. They have Romy Gonzalez, basically a 20 home or 20 stolen base guy during his minor league career. They also have Lenin Sosa, basically during his minor league career, 278, 15 home run guy. So we'll see what happens there. Another big news there, Scott, Chris Sale. Season is done. He was already on the IL recovering from surgery to repair a fractured pinky. Now, all of a sudden, he tries to go bike riding over the past weekend. I guess he couldn't grab that handlebar too tightly because he had a biking accident and fractured his wrist, and now he had surgery. He's done for the season.
Man, you know, what's so heartbreaking about this is he had an injury-prone label stuck to him when he was coming up and when he was with the White Sox, because everyone was worried about this tiny little frame. Of course, now the wheels are falling off for what's frustrating is it's a variety of different reasons. It's shoulder, it's wrist. It's a lot of reasons. You know, he gets hit by a pitch, like all kinds of things keep putting him on the IL.
Yeah. The pinky thing was a freak accident. When he was pitching against the Yanks, that was a freak thing.
Yeah, and so he keeps getting these freak accidents, and on one hand, injury risk does go up, like every time as you get older, and every time they get hurt, you're just more likely to get hurt. So on one hand, it goes up. On the other hand, you have to remember a lot of these were just, I mean, random, right? Like not totally random, but very unpredictable, not necessarily related to like repetitive stress. When we talk about injury risk and re-injuring something, it's usually repetitive stress stuff we're worried about, elbow, shoulders. Like that stuff's what we can predict better, but like you can't predict getting hit in the hand and then breaking your wrist.
Right.
That's hard to predict. So he's going to be tough next year from a risk of, you know, he's going to play next year, probably all season in theory, but there's a huge risk assessment that has to be done there. That's going to be interesting.
Going to be very interesting to see where Chris Sale goes, talking about next year. And then later on in the show, I'll tease it. We did a way too early mock draft, 6 rounds of it that we'll discuss later on. But like you talk about the next year, you know, Chris Sale has always been looked upon. Yes, like you said, a bit injury prone, but at the same time, one of the premier pitchers in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, what's tough is like he is injury prone, but like not necessarily because of something he's doing with like his pitching mechanics,
mm-hmm.
right? He like his last two are just like getting hurt. Like the way his injuries are like injuries I would have, like a regular person. Like I get hit in the hand in a beer league softball game and then crash my bike, right? Like those are regular people injuries. So it like those injuries won't affect his performance.
Well, you have too many beers while playing softball beer. You know,
you don't want to bike under the influence.
Right.
But I will say in dynasty leagues, what's really tough here is you'd want to be trading this guy for future assets if you're in a rebuild, but you can't even do that.
Right.
What's
right.
weird is that as sale, yeah. the dynasty value play on Sale is actually just to hold him. Because mm-hmm. his value couldn't possibly be lower than it is right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Did you ever think that Matt Carpenter would have some fantasy value this season? I mean, I definitely didn't. But you know what? I rostered him in the 15-team TGFBI. And it got to a point now where I was going to only start him when he played at home at Yankee Stadium. Because over the weekend, I was watching him play against the Cardinals and he hit a ball that would have went out in right field in Yankee Stadium, but it went to warning track. But I'll just bring it up real quick. Carpenter is going to be out for a while, fractured his foot, had a .305 batting average, 15 homers, 37 RBI in 47 games. That's actually, you know what, I guess more of a real-life blow to the Yanks right now because Giancarlo Stanton is out. But, you know, it's kind of a sad story.
It is. He had some magic. It definitely wore off during the All-Star break. Since we came back from the All-Star break, the plate discipline's great. Walking a little over 10% of the time, striking out a little under 20% of the time. We love that. Mm-hmm. But he was only hitting .224. OBP was .316. That's fine. Slugging .429. That's fine. He was a fifth outfielder hitting in the middle of a injury depleted, but still productive lineup. But now that he's out for basically the rest of the season, I mean, he's a drop in all but the very deepest of leagues.
Agreed. Miguel Andujar called up to replace him. Andujar, good hitter. It's just that the Yanks can't really find a place to play him every day. You know, he's batting .293, 12 homers, 46 RBI in 64 minor league games. No real fantasy value, but rooting for Miguel Andujar. And let me just go over real quick as we're going to move on. Couple moves that I made. A friend, Mil Reyes, released by the Guardians. Actually picked him up, and I'm going to stream him in a 12-team head-to-head league. Look, you know, Cubs picked him up. Nice hitter's ballpark. I know he had a rough go of it so far this season, .213 with 9 homers in 70 games. But this is the kind of guy that if he gets hot, you know, what do we have? We have about, 7 weeks left to the season. If he gets hot, he could hit another 12 home runs for you, in my opinion. And nice landing spot. And we're recording this on Tuesday the 9th. He's outfield and obviously utility eligible in Yahoo leagues. And he's in the starting lineup on Tuesday night.
Yeah, they just slapped him in the fifth spot, right? Mm-hmm. Like, What a day, right? He gets picked up off waivers and he's hitting, you know, he's batting fifth right in the middle of the lineup. So right. With Franmil Reyes, on one hand, it's easy to talk about the fact that this is a guy who, when clicking, looks like a 40 home run bat, right? There's mm-hmm. a very finite number of those. That's just what he can do. The problem is he's one of these guys who at his best looks like, you know, an absolute wrecking ball at the plate. Like he just crushes everything. But then when he's at his worst, it's this very Javi Baez effect that when he's off, he just looks, I mean, he looks like he needs to be DFA'd, right? I mean, he's that, I mean, his hit tool has never been something that has been his advantage, right?
He likes to swing the bat too. 37% strikeout rate this season.
Well, he likes to swing the bat because, you know, he's not trying to stop it first, right? Mm-hmm. Franmil Reyes is a three true outcomes guy, except like that third outcome, the walk, that doesn't really happen. He doesn't really do that. Like, it, in theory, he'll take some walks, and he does at times, but not enough to offset some of the negative. I think he's a guy that, yeah, stream him for power. That's fine. It was the same thing you were doing when he was a Guardian. It's just now maybe he's a little more likely to do it because the Cubs don't have much of a, you know, they don't have a super deep lineup right now. They don't have any reason not to play him at DH. Say Suzuki's not been what they hoped after coming out real hot. Ian Happ's been pretty good. Wilson Contreras, obviously good, but like the rest of the lineup. I mean, what's weird is that Franmil Reyes and Patrick Wisdom are here in the same lineup. And basically Patrick Wisdom is what Franmil Reyes is, but except Patrick Wisdom isn't as cold, right? He's had more hot streaks this season, so he's useful for fantasy. Franmil Reyes hasn't been yet. Like, this is not a 12-team action thing for me, unless, you know, you've got a big gaping hole in your second utility spot or something. But he's someone you can at least watch list, see if he hits two or three home runs in a series, and then maybe grab it, right? Especially if he gets some nice pitching matchups. You know, they'll be around, but he's a guy that can take advantage of bad pitching, but he's able to do that less and less the older he gets, apparently.
Right. Couple of sleepers I wanted to talk about. Michael Massey, second baseman for the Royals. Obviously, we talked about Whit Merrifield getting traded to the Blue Jays at the trade deadline. You look at Massey's minor league numbers, 5-2 guy, good OBP skills, right? Minor league numbers, 294, 356, 506. Like a 21 home runs in 2021 with 12 stolen bases. So, that, and I was reading that he made a real nice defensive play today. Like I said, we're recording this on Tuesday the 9th. You know, I picked him up in a 15 teamer and I'm going to stream him as a middle infielder.
Yeah. And that sounds right. So with him, I mean, he's one of these hit tool guys, right? So you'll notice he hasn't shown, I mean, it's a very small sample in the majors, of course, but he hasn't shown very much power. I think he's got one extra base hit so far. He's got a double and he actually got it on the 7th. So last time he played, I think that he has a chance to keep moving up in the order. They batted him second a few days ago, and I think that'd be really cool if he can stick there. He might be a decent volume guy. His average will be okay. His OBP really won't. He was walking 9.1% of the time in the minors, and that's fine. I don't think that's what it's going to look like in the majors. That'll probably come out to more like a very average 7.5%, maybe less. The strikeout rate should still be good too. I think he's going to make a lot of contact. The problem is I don't think he's going to do a ton with it. So he's got this very light, hopefully what we see is a Bryson Stott, 2022 Alec Bohm, David Fletcher, Luis Arias kind of guy who, I mean, this is the upside, that he makes tons of contact, doesn't strike out very much, doesn't walk very much either, and has good ratios except for slugging, right? Like, I'm not sure this is a guy that's going to slug above 400 very often, but a little bit of power, a little bit of stolen bases. Another guy that, you know, the best case scenario for him is hopefully he can be sort of like what Alec Thomas has been so far, just a little bit of everything.
Right.
Nothing outstanding, but a little bit. He's like a 2.5 tool guy because he's got half a tool across the board.
Yeah. I'm going to just, his walk rate this season in the minor leagues was 9.1. So I think he walks, you know, decent amount of times. But like I said, I added him in a 15 teamer, and we'll see. I mean, I'm not going to hang my season on him, but
that's where to add him.
Yeah,
that's where it is. It's that 15 team league where you need that middle, you know, that middle infield spot. I mean, I think that's ideal. If you're in a more shallow league than that, there's just not, you don't need to do anything here. Go get like Aledmys Diaz or someone else who's like a more proven version of this. Yeah.
Well, just keep Mike Massey on your watch list for now, obviously. Let's talk about one of your favorite teams there, the Rockies. I'm liking them so far, what I'm seeing from Elauris Montero, Rockies first baseman, third baseman. They've been using him in DH. Maybe in line for some long-term playing time with Chris Bryant still dealing with plantar fasciitis. Another guy with some power, and you can never go wrong. I guess you could go wrong with a rocky hitter in your lineup, but it's always enticing to get someone that's going to play half the games in Coors Field in your lineup.
Yeah, it is. And what's actually kind of fun is like this recent hot streak where he's been hitting the ball like crazy was on the road, right? Like he did all that in San Diego and Arizona. He's now on a, you know, now he's about to be on a home stretch. I mean, just tons of doubles, right? I love to see that.
Absolutely. He had, what,
five doubles in his last seven games. That's great to see. The pot, and like one of the one game, he didn't have a double because he hit a home run. Right. Like that, it's really exciting to see this. And it's a great time for him to pick up that momentum heading right into a week at Coors. Right. So I think he's going to be, his stats are going to get really bloated, I think, over the next week, because you're going to have like he's about to be the best over the last 15 days guy by the end of this week, which is fine. Right. I think he's maybe a little more limited as a hitter than we're seeing, but he has a good hit tool, good power. At one time, this was a real prospect. It's just that like when you projected a 50 hit tool and a 50 power, he has never really grown into that hit tool. So obviously even in the majors, he's not walking like at all, but that's because he's hitting right now. So I don't really care that he's not walking. I think he'll start walking when they stop throwing him strikes, but there's definite power here. And that's the tool you're going after. There's power. And then because of Coors, there's safe batting average. I don't want to say that he's going to be a great batting average contributor, but because he's in Coors, the real Coors effect kicks in, and it probably gives him an extra 10 to 30 points of batting average, depending on how lucky he is. Right. So I think he'll continue to hit something like somewhere between 260 and 280, and he'll hit home runs, right?
Yep.
Maybe not much more than that, but he'll hit home runs, and he can hit like 260 to 280. And that's good. Right. There's nothing wrong with that. I think he's a great, I mean, I'm streaming him in a ton of leagues, right? 12 team and deeper, especially if I need a corner infielder. I'm streaming him everywhere because he was already hot and then he gets to go into Coors. I don't have to make a decision really until I'm going into next week, because this decision was made for me. A hot hitter with a bunch of games in Coors, that's automatic.
You know, at this point, what are there, like I mentioned earlier, about 7 weeks left to the season. By the way, we were just talking about Eloise Montero. If you can't find him, you spell his first name Eleheuris Montero's Montero. So, about 7 weeks or so left to regular season. And look, if you're in the middle of the pack, you got a good shot to, you know, finish top three in your league. You know, I would never give up. But let's say if you're totally out of it, you might think of DFS at this juncture. But what are we thinking about Derek Hall? Phillies, he's been playing some DH there, unfortunately, util only in Yahoo leagues. But almost exclusively starts against right-handed pitching, which is a little bit of a problem. But you look at his numbers so far in 29 games, 8 home runs, 15 RBI, 282 batting average, and displayed a pretty good hit tool in the minor leagues as well. Good power.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Hall's got, right? I like that the plate discipline has gotten much better since, you know, I'm using the All-Star break because it's roughly, you know, like a little over 2 weeks. I usually have it almost 50 plate appearance, you know, usually about 50 plate appearance sample size when I go right now from the All-Star break. So there's something there. I love seeing the strikeout rate for Hall being closer to 20 to 22% instead of up by 30 like it was earlier. I like that the walk rate is fine. Right? 6.5%, not nearly as bad as it was when he first came up. That tells me he's making adjustments. And you hear me talk about making adjustments all the time, because for a guy like Hall, that's what he has to do. Every pitcher knows what Derek Hall is trying to do in the box, and that's hit the ball really, really far. And yeah, I know everybody's trying to do that, but they also know that he's selling out, right? He does that. But the fact that he's changing a little is going to force pitchers to challenge him in the zone more. And by making them challenge him in the zone more, he gets more pitches to potentially send a very, very long way, as evidenced by 3 home runs in his last 2 games, right? And no strikeouts. That's key. No strikeouts. 4 hits, 3 home runs, and a double, all extra base stuff, and no strikeouts. Love to see that. He's got several games lately with no strikeouts. That's what I want to see. It's little by little, not necessarily a ton, but no strikeouts in games for Derek Hall and hitting doubles or home runs. Like the 310 batting average, great, awesome. That's because he's ripping the ball right now. But and that may come down a bit, but I think that he's, you know, he's going to keep playing for Philly. He'll play probably a little bit more than you think. It's going to the next time he plays first base, he might get some eligibility in some leagues that have really low thresholds, like Yahoo, which is five starts. He's got four, I think, so he should be eligible pretty soon, potentially at first base if you need a lift. But yeah, Derek Hall, lots of power. And when he gets hot, of course, like he is right now, he can be really deadly. He may not be someone you hold for the rest of the season, and that's fine. Yep. Right? Because you don't need to, especially if you're in a playoff race. You don't pick up Derek Hall because you think he'll be really good in late September. You pick up Derek Hall because he's really good right now and you could use some power.
Right.
Right. You don't need to worry. Yeah, I really don't even want to hear people giving me too many, like, who do you like better rest of season? Because it's kind of now, like, it doesn't matter. Right. Right now you're fighting for your play. Unless you're not having to fight for your playoff, like many of us are, or trying to secure a bye or whatever, you almost care more about the immediate future, the next 2 to 3 weeks. Or heck, if you really want to manage, you only care about series to series. Right. I'm really not looking out much past 2 or 3 weeks when I'm looking at players of Derek Hall's caliber, right? These guys that are on the hitter list that are maybe like past like 100 and stuff like that. Look at the short term, right? We're going to already start doing that with pitchers. Pretty soon, everything's going to be about what's the remaining schedule. But now, you know, with hitters, you just focus on what's in the immediate future. You know, what's coming up? If Montero was staring down a 2 week road trip, I'd be a little less rosy on it, right? He was hitting on the road, but so that matters. And with Derek Hall, I'll probably be looking on the teams I have him, which isn't very many. I'm looking at that schedule, you know, on Yahoo, on ESPN, you can pull up the expected schedule. I'm looking at those pitchers. And if I see, you know, you don't see it much, but occasionally you'll run into three left-handers in a week. That's where I'm like, you know, so especially if Hall is cooled down, that's when you start thinking about cutting him. I'm not saying cut him now. I don't want you to think about doing that now. I'm saying, when you want to think about Derek Hall, that's usually what's going on. Couple unfortunate matchups. Maybe he's got like they're going to have an off day, and then two lefties on the mound against the Phillies, and he's been slumping. That's when you'll cut him. But of course, that's not right now. Right now, he's hot and he's hitting, so keep him.
Right. And the reason why I bring up guys like Michael Massey and Eloise Montero, you know, just want to remind people that, look, you know, you still got to work that waiver wire, and there's still going to be ball players that are going to present themselves as, you know, useful in your fantasy teams and have some fantasy value. I just saw a little blip about Josh Jung. Remember him? J-U-N-G, third baseman for the Rangers. He's beginning a rehab assignment with I think it was the Rangers double A team for now. So keep, you know, following the MLB news and, you know, working the waiver wire hard. You had wanted to talk about Miguel Vargas. You said you got a lot of traction in the Reddit.
Yeah, that AMA we do every Friday. With Vargas, I think there's a couple lessons here. Number one, like, we were talking about this before the show. It's really hard to hit your way into a lineup like the Dodgers.
Right.
Right. Like, even with the numbers he was posting, you know, he was doing well in Triple A. He, you know, obviously came out and hit, you know, he hit really well. I mean, his very first game in, he gets two hits, he gets a double, he steals a base. Like, there's cool stuff there. And if he were to play the rest of the season, there's some interesting things. There's decent batting average, there's some power, there's some speed. But when you can't just look at Miguel Vargas in a vacuum. You're thinking, okay, Miguel Vargas is here right now. What would make him leave? Oh yeah, the fact that Justin Turner, who was just activated, is coming back, right? Chris Taylor coming back. It's hard for guys like Miguel Vargas to stay on the roster there because the players he has to beat out to stay on that roster, there's, you know, people talk about, oh, he'll hit his way into the lineup, but not if he only gets two games. Right? Like, it takes a while to hit yourself into a lineup, and this team did not pick up Joey Gallo not to use him. Right? Like, sure, you could argue that Miguel Vargas would be more valuable on this bench.
I'm gonna stop you when you talk about Joey Gallo. Ever since they got him, they're undefeated. He's the key to the Dodgers winning a championship.
When you want to talk about intangibles, you talk about the fact, I forget exactly what the stat was, but they pulled up like what is, you know, the record for teams when Joey Gallo is in their starting lineup, and it's like ridiculous, right? Yeah. Now it's a function of playing for the Yankees and Dodgers this season,
right?
But that, you know, it's funny enough to look at, And obviously, he has not shown that he's really worth rostering. He got a hit his first game, but he's already struck out a bunch of times.
He is what he is, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, he just is. But that team is just more likely to put him in the lineup right now than Miguel Vargas. So Miguel Vargas gets sent down. And we're going to see players come up and have loud, splashy debuts or, you know, have a lot of potential. But really what you want to be looking at is, why is this player up? Miguel Vargas was up to fill some injury holes. Mm-hmm. And once those holes got filled, you know, they got made whole for guys like Chris Taylor and Justin Turner. Mm-hmm. Like, Miguel Vargas can't beat those guys out for a roster spot. Like, mm-hmm. not just because of talent and experience, but because locker room chemistry, so many things. That was never going to happen. So, you know, that stinks. And I'm not saying, like, oh, always ignore these guys. It's just, be very, very cognizant. Like, just be, you know, another thing that came up about these Dodgers, we don't talk about pitching much, but I got a lot of questions about Dustin May, right? Mm-hmm. He's dominating in the minor leagues. He's looking great, but they weren't going to, like they said, he needs two more rehab starts. Everyone's like, well, that means you're going to call him up sooner, right? Like, they need Dustin May now. That Clayton Kershaw hit the IL. They got to bring up May now. And that's just not what's going to happen. Turns out the Dodgers are like a bazillion games ahead of the Padres right now. It's double digit games ahead of the Padres.
They're starting pitching this weekend. Didn't give up an earned run to the Padres.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good. And then when you look at the fact that the Dodgers...
No Walker Buehler, no Kershaw.
Yeah, and the Dodgers had two games off this week, right? So they can actually keep a four-man rotation until, like, sometime in the middle of next week, right? So that, like, and then if they need another spot start, they've got other guys in the minors. They've got, like, Ryan Pepiot, right? Like, he's mm-hmm. out there. He can be a spot starter. The Dodgers are a team where you really have to think, another thing to think about is just that team context. You know what they don't do? Rush guys along, right? They had no issue sending Miguel Vargas down, just like they never had any issue sending, when he was a top prospect, Gavin Lux down.
Right.
Right.
And they don't have to, because they keep on winning. Yeah. They don't have to rush these guys.
No, they don't. And it's the same thing with their pitching, right? It's Dodgeritis, just on a different scale. They're slow to bring back guys from injury, and they're slow to bring up guys who are developing, because they just don't need to, because they can compete for a World Series without them. So they do. And that's just the way it is. And it's unfortunate, because I want to see Dustin May back sooner, but this team is going to be patient. And I would definitely take them at their word if they say he's going to need more time, because they've got no reason to lie about it. They are just slow bringing players up, and it stinks, because I'd love to see these guys playing, but you just have to think, it's really important to think about, especially when you're playing for your playoff life and you're week to week in some of these leagues, be careful of picking up, like, you know, picking up Dustin May is a good idea if he's still available, because he's going to be up pretty soon, but don't, like, you know, don't get ahead of yourself thinking he's going to be activated just because a guy got hurt. The Dodgers will go out of their way to make sure they don't have to call up a guy coming from injury or being developed sooner than they have to.
Right. Speaking pitching, Drew Rasmussen, starting pitcher for the Rays, removed from his Sunday start after three perfect innings against your Tigers. And conventional wisdom is that, you know, maybe the Rays are managing his innings, and he was recently on the IL. So, that's an issue, I think, that not just specifically with him, that fantasy managers have to take into consideration as well with some of the young pitchers that they roster.
Yeah, I mean, Rasmussen brings it up. We've already talked about guys like Logan Gilbert being limited and just being managed for the rest of the season. You're also going to see guys like, you know, it's going to start coming up for guys who are injury prone, mm-hmm. like Pablo Lopez over in Miami. You're going to start seeing this. Too. I would say there's two things. Number one, you don't want to get ahead of yourself, right? Like, if you've got Pablo Lopez, you don't need to do anything right now, right? Like,
you might want to bench him for now, because he isn't pitching well. No?
Yeah. But you're not worried about the innings cap yet, mm-hmm. right? Generally, we're going to start seeing it pick up, but really not until probably like a little after mid August, but really into September. And there's more than one ways that teams limit innings, right? They don't just bench guys. They'll skip starts, or they'll stretch out, and they'll move, you know, they'll have this guy go every sixth day, seventh day, eighth day. Sometimes they'll keep starting him, like we might see with Rasmussen. We don't know yet. You know, the decision they gave us was a baseball decision, and they did win that game 7-0. right? It's not like they didn't really need him, right? They probably felt pretty good with their bullpen against a Tigers team that can't hit righties to save their lives. But what you do have to just think about is, one, don't get ahead of yourself. Don't be like, oh, well, now that he's on an innings cap, I got to trade him. Because guess what? Most people in your league know how to use Google. And if there's any story out there about a guy having an innings cap,
they use Bing, but anyway.
I mean, what's going to happen is people aren't going to want to trade. So don't get desperate just because a lot of trade deadlines are coming up. Don't sell him for, you know, don't trade him for pennies on the dollar, so to speak, just because he has an innings limit. Because he might still be very valuable, right? You might, I mean, we'll see. But if his next start, he goes 5-6 innings, like, you're going to feel pretty silly for forcing yourself to do something with him. But I mean, he's got a sub 3 ERA. Like, even if he doesn't give you many innings, like, you probably, especially in head-to-head leagues, you might still have use for a guy that throws 6 innings in a week because he gets shorter starts, right? Like, these kinds of things can happen. So just be patient a little bit until you have a better idea of what's coming. And then when guys are on innings limits, that's when you really have to flip your philosophy, and it's okay to cut them, right? Like, you really want to think about, I mean, a tool, even if you're not good at projecting, at least go over to FanGraphs. They do a great job presenting their projections for rest of season, and just look at the range of innings pitched left, right? Just look at those. That'll give you some idea of what how many innings a player might pitch. I mean, it's not as though he didn't pitch at all in 2021, right? I mean, he did. He probably threw a combined 76 innings last season. And that doesn't include AAA, right? So you get up to 80. He's only at 90 now. I do think he'll probably get another 30 to 50 innings, right? Depending on how well those starts go and how taxed he is in those. So that's still plenty, right? That's still plenty. Don't panic.
Yep. That's a great tool that you just mentioned. And sometimes I'll just look myself and see, well, this guy pitched 110 innings last season, tack on another 30 or so. I could see him going to, up to 140, 150. But hey, it's time, Scott, for you to tout your Tigers. Matt Manning doing pretty well since coming off the IL, had a start on the 2nd and the 7th. His last start, 7 innings against the Tampa Bay Rays, pitched a shutout for 7 innings with 7 strikeouts. Should we get excited?
Well, I mean, maybe.
Come on, these are your Tigers.
So home, like, with Matt Manning, the strikeouts haven't really been where we want to see yet in the majors. But it is worth noting that very smart people, several of them, ranked him as the best Tigers pitching prospect back in 2020, 2021, right? Like, really excited about Matt Manning. They thought he could be better than Mize, better than Skubal. He's not there right now, but I mean, the kid's got, he's got a good fastball. I think the breakers are pretty well developed. He was a top 15 prospect in a lot of places because he had just performed really well. Now, again, in the majors hasn't been great, but this season better. And what I love seeing last, that start against Tampa Bay, the huge thing about that, which you pointed out, are those strikeouts, right? Like, I don't care if he gets hit around a little bit. He hasn't been hit around much this season, but that's only because he hasn't played. He's got 4 starts in the majors, but keep watching the strikeouts. Once he starts consistently getting strikeouts, I think we could really see a pitcher who's quite valuable for fantasy as someone who could maybe be ranked in like the middle of the pitcher list, right? Like somewhere in like 40 to 60 to 70 at some point. That's probably going to happen during next season. Not yet, but there's a lot of promise there, and he's worth streaming. He's still going to get more games against Kansas City. He's going to get more games against the Guardians, who just aren't very good. Like, they win games, but they don't win by a ton of runs. Right. There's going to be chances for him to have good starts. I think he's a good spot starter for now. But just be really careful with what matchups you use him in.
Another pitcher that maybe just, take a look to see if he's available. He's owned or rostered, I should say, in 57% of Yahoo League. So I guess because Yahoo has the IL spot, they held on to him. But Jesus Luzardo for the Marlins has been pitching well. Last 2 starts, a total of 12 innings pitched. 11 strikeouts, just 1 walk for a 1.5 ERA. So if he's around, wouldn't hurt to just, pick him up and stash him. Or actually start him now.
I'm a huge Jesus Luzardo fan. Mm-hmm. I loved him even when he was with the A's and disappointing us.
Yeah.
He's even better in the pitching factory known as Miami. With Luzardo, first of all, a lot of leagues, you know, some of your league mates have checked out. There's no reason if everyone was paying attention, Jesus Luzardo would not be available in 70% of ESPN leagues.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That just wouldn't be the case. But it is right now because a lot of people aren't paying attention.
Right.
Like, don't just assume because everyone in podcast is talking about a guy that he's not available in your league. He mm-hmm. just might be. Right. Like, not everyone in your league does listen to every baseball podcast. Not everyone in your league does, you know, read a bunch of baseball articles. If you're doing that, like, this is the advantage you get to check. Right. Mm-hmm. If for some reason Jesus Luzardo is taken, he's only available in about 40% of Yahoo leagues. But if he is available, you got to get him because. Yes, beating up on the Cubs is pretty easy right now. They've been one of the worst offenses in baseball since the All-Star break. But still, there's a lot of strikeout upside in here. He may not always go seven innings, but I do think he'll strike out five to seven guys every time he starts because as long as he goes five innings, he can do that easily.
Yep.
So with Luzardo, it's all about the strikeouts. I think the ratios will also be pretty good. He doesn't walk a ton of guys. If anything, he's been too hittable. He hit the zone too much. Before, so it's not like he has wild command problems. He just is, you know, too much in the zone. I think Miami knows how to fix that because they, you know, they just don't have very many pitchers with that problem in Miami because mm-hmm. the way they develop. So, I mean, it was a great landing spot for Luzardo. He may be available, especially in ESPN leagues for some reason. And yeah, he should be rostered in all 12 team leagues right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right. Well, we're going to take a break right here, quick one. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the way too early mock draft that was organized by Austin Bristow II that Scott and I participated in, 12-teamer, standard head-to-head league, and 5x5 category. So we'll be right back to talk about our too early mock draft right after this.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right, and we're back. Joe Galina and Scott Chu, Hacks and Jacks Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Before we took our quick break, we teased the fact that Scott and I were involved in a 12-team mock draft that was organized by Austin Bristow II. You could see our write-ups on it on pitcherlist.com. Nice article. Each of us wrote a little blurb about what it was like being in the mock and the picks that we made. And from a personal level, Scott, and we kind of mentioned this because it was a slow draft and we were drafting the last time that we podcasted together. And it was kind of, it's weird kind of doing this kind of a draft without the benefit of, first of all, a full season's stats. Second of all, just, you know, no lists of or consensus lists of ADPs. You're kind of going on it, on your own, almost like a, you know, flying a trapeze without a net.
You really are. One of the ways to use something like this isn't to necessarily assess what drafts will look like next year, right? It's more about getting a feel for depth in various parts of the draft. And also sort of seeing like how high are some people on some players. Like, you can see that Jake Mesh in our, you know, from Pitcher List must be real high on Alejandro Kirk and isn't that phased by the recent slump,
mm-hmm.
right? He was willing to take him in the fifth round. Now, you may, if you really pushed him, he might say, yeah, I guess I would have liked some of these guys that got picked after, but you know, I was thinking he had Alejandro Kirk on the brain. Right. And at the same token, I picked Trevor Story in the sixth round as my last pick, thinking, you know, coming into this year, I valued him much higher than this. And hey, if he has a hot September, like we saw him be hot earlier this year, this pick makes a lot of sense. Of course, right now it looks like my most regrettable pick because he just continues to look terrible. But with these, for me, it was all about thinking of depth, and man, the first two, even three rounds of drafts are so deep. There are so many good players available. Even in the third, I mean, the first pick of the third round is Bobby Witt Jr., mm-hmm. right? Mike Trout, Jake DeGrom, right? Ozzie Albies, Dansby Swanson. These are third round picks that feel like they should be earlier than that. But when you look at the board, they don't need, like, they're not earlier than that.
Right.
Right? Because the first two rounds are just loaded.
Yeah, let's take a look at the first.
The last three picks of the second round. Austin Riley, Kyle Tucker, Lewis Robert.
Yeah, so let's just take a try to do this quickly without boring our listeners. But first six picks. Shohei Ohtani, number one overall. You had the second pick. You picked Jose Ramirez. Great pick, obviously, having an incredible year. And third base has typically been a little bit of a shallow position. Third pick, Ronald Acuna Jr., Aaron Judge making a jump, right, as the fourth overall pick. Vlad Guerrero Jr. as the fifth overall. And Shelly V picked a great pick in Trey Turner, first shortstop, second baseman off the board. And we know what he could do. But any surprises here at all? No, right?
No, I mean, there's arguments to be made. So in this draft, Shohei Ohtani goes first because Shohei Ohtani is eligible at both DH and starting pitcher. And in every league where Shohei Ohtani is eligible at both, he is the consensus number one.
It has to be. Yeah.
Yeah. And anyone that says otherwise is trying very hard to be contrarian because it's so hard to even wrap your head around the value of a guy who is two things in one roster spot, right? You get to have Shohei Ohtani and another pitcher or hitter with, you know, with two roster spots. You're functionally getting three players with two roster spots. That's really hard to conceptualize that value. But yeah, he's a combined player. So he's first overall every time.
Right.
And, you know, all year I've ranked Jose Ramirez as my number one hitter. Really, I've been doing that for quite some time. I had to take him there, but no surprises, except again, the depth, right? Mm. The depth. Trey Turner going in the middle of the first round, he's having a good season. And as early as 2022 drafts, he was a consideration for a top three pick. He still is, right? You can shuffle up almost everything besides Shohei Ohtani and probably feel fine about it.
Right. Juan Soto going seventh, which, you know, in preseason drafts, he was going, you know, top four. Eighth pick, Fernando Tatis Jr. I know his injury history doesn't scare you it doesn't bother you or whatnot. But Corbin Burns went ninth. Jordan Alvarez, who I was hoping, I picked 12th. I was hoping to get Jordan Alvarez. I love Jordan Alvarez for next year's drafts. He went 10th. 11th, Julio Rodriguez making it all the way to the first round. I'll be honest with you, that when I think about it, and like, yeah, you know, this guy could hit 25 home runs and steal 35 bases and, you know, probably bat 280 next season. Yeah, I guess he is a first rounder.
Yeah, he is. And, you know, a little news on him. He's going to be activated later this week, probably for the weekend series. And, you know, while we did this draft while he was on the IL, but if you do another too early mock, like 4 weeks from now, and Julio Rodriguez looks like the hot Julio Rodriguez we saw when he went down, like he probably goes even earlier because someone's going to want that insane upside, right? You know, he's still carrying a strikeout rate on the season of 27.2%, but first 96 games. So, you know, he's already got 18 home runs and 21 stolen bases, right? He's hitting 271. And that's despite the fact of having this 27.2% strikeout rate, which is actually quite bloated because he fixed the strikeout rate considerably
since
then, right? So, like, because, like, since July 1st, it's only a 22.9% strikeout rate. Like that, those 5 points are a big deal, right? So with Julio Rodriguez, I think he could even somehow move up. Although, again, these first couple of rounds are so loaded that you're kind of like, where do you move him to?
Right.
Right. I mean, Juan Soto goes sixth. This, I believe that pick happened seventh. Before he was traded.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, seventh. But even then, like, could you flip him with Ronald Acuna Jr.? You totally could. Mm-hmm. Right. Julio Rodriguez probably doesn't go top three, top four. But I mean, really, you start getting to Trey Turner and you're like, okay, Trey Turner, he's really good. But like Julio Rodriguez can do that too. Right. Like Julio Rodriguez is that kind of player. I mean, again, I can't say it enough. If this too early mock did nothing else, it showed you that early drafts are going to be super deep. And where you pick in a draft, unless, you know, specifically you want Shohei Ohtani, it's not really going to matter. You're going to end up with two really, really good players.
Mm-hmm. One of the few things I got right this so far this season was I was like a couple of rounds early in taking Julio Rodriguez in a couple of drafts. And I just loved what he did in the minor leagues. Every time he was promoted, it didn't faze him. He still put up big numbers. But my pick was 12th, so I had two picks. Bryce Harper, you tend to forget about him, right? But, you know, he really has settled into Philadelphia. Past couple seasons, batting over 300, you know, 30, 35 home run potential. And even they'll give you, you know, 10 to 15 steals. And then I followed that pick up with Rafael Devers. Obviously, like I mentioned earlier, third base position, a little shallower. And Devers is another guy that could hit anywhere from 280 to 300 and hit 35 home runs to knock in 100 RBI. So that was pick 13. 14th pick. We're in the second round, moving backwards now. Mookie Betts, Paul Goldschmidt having an MVP caliber year, man. And the one story that I remember about Paul Goldschmidt in preseason, Scott, was that he went to this this independent company and they made him like a custom bat or something. Or they made him a series of custom bats, and he was a great hitter to start off with. But that just stuck in my mind about Goldschmidt. And then you have Freddie Freeman. That's 13, 14, 15, 16th pick is Freddie Freeman. 17th pick, Shane McClanahan. 18th pick, Sandy Alcantara.
I think, you know, first I do want to say I thought the Bryce Harper pick was great. This year's been unlucky, and it stinks that he's still, you know, he's actually trending a little behind in his recovery right now. We may not see him till like the last week of August, maybe not even until like the start of September. But, you know, I think you still have to stash him in just about every league because he's going to be really good when he comes back. As much as it felt like he's been injury prone throughout his career, the last three or four seasons, he just hasn't been, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been playing all season for, you know, probably three or four consecutive seasons until this year. So that stinks. But yeah, like what was almost crazy to me, if you told me coming into the year that three pitchers could arguably be taken ahead of Gerrit Cole, that'd blow my mind.
That is interesting. Yes.
He's going a whole round later than he would have last season. And it's not like he's been bad.
Right. Well, he hasn't been bad, but he hasn't been lights out. He hasn't been Scherzer. He hasn't been what DeGrom did this past Sunday. He got beat up by the Mariners in his last start. He's still striking out a ton of players. But he has had, you know, he hasn't been 100% lights out, you know, if you watch him pitch every day and then you still think back to what happened when he faced the Red Sox in the playoffs last season. So, but it is interesting to see him last well into the second round.
Yeah. And I mean, coming into the month of July, and I'm not saying you should just like, you know, just get rid of his bad months. But coming into the month of July, he had a 2.99 ERA and looked very much, you know, Gerrit Cole-like, right? Except for that 1.5 home run game that he had. And, you know, he is giving up the gopher ball a little more than we'd like. And
gave up three against the Mariners in his last start.
Yeah.
You know, settled down, but...
Yeah, but like, that's the depth of this draft. Gerrit Cole is still Gerrit Cole, right? This is still, you know, elite upside, and Max Scherzer doesn't even get taken yet, right? Mm-hmm. Like a lot of good pitchers still on the board. He's the third pitcher. Like, right. fourth. He's the fourth pitcher to go off the board. Because again, we're seeing this incredible depth at the top of the league right now, mm-hmm. where there's not these clear tier breaks that happen in the first two or three rounds. Like, there are tier breaks that you can make, but they're not as clean as in years past, right? Like, even as recently as two or three years ago, we'd say, like, if you don't get a pick in the top four or five, go to the end of the draft, mm-hmm. because the talent doesn't change between 6 and 12. But like, now the talent doesn't, like, the difference between 1 and 5 and then 5 and 8 and then 8 and 12, it's just not that different right now, because there's just a lot of depth there.
Yep. Pick number 19, Manny Machado. We spoke about Gerrit Cole at pick 20, Pete Alonso, 40 to 50 home run potential, at pick 21, pick 22, Austin Riley, just, coming into his own, signed to a real long-term contract by the Braves. Pick 23 was made by you, Kyle Tucker. I know that you're big on Kyle Tucker. Having a little bit of an off year when it comes to batting average, and I think that the batting average that he's showing now is probably more what he's likely to hit. You know, I think last year he batted somewhere in the 290s. You know, he might be maybe a 260 to 275 hitter, in my opinion, but still gives you, you know, plenty of home runs and stolen bases. And then the second round finished off with Luis Robert.
Yeah, and, you know, Kyle Tucker, I think if he has an even okay month, you know, his batting average has really been an issue. He's not putting up quite the stat you'd hope, but the plate discipline still looks great. So mm-hmm. he's just slumping a little right now. I think, you know, really even since the start of July, again, he's only hitting 211, but the strikeout to walk ratio is fantastic. He's still hitting for some power. He's stealing a couple bases. You know, he'll turn it around, and I think he'll be a guy that might get drafted a little earlier than this next year. But again, it's hard to say how, right? Like, Kyle Tucker, you know, you'd say, like, oh, well, Kyle Tucker has top 10 player upside. I'm like, yeah, that's true. But how much better is Kyle Tucker than Manny Machado? How much better is Kyle Tucker than, you know, than any of these guys, Freddie Freeman, Pete Alonso? Like, there's real arguments for these guys, because I'm not going to stop saying it. The depth is unreal.
Yeah.
You get first round, you're going to get back end first round caliber players at the back of the second round. Start of the third round, even, right? Like, guys that you would have considered in the middle second round are now third, fourth round picks, because that kind of depth is happening at the top.
Now, when you were drafting, were you conscious of trying to set an ADP for 2023 season, or were you trying to draft a team based on, well, you know, I have, you know, went third base my first pick, and, you know, now I want to get my outfielder, and then I'm going to go for my pitchers.
I love being nerdy and talking about draft strategy in August. It's great. the problem with trying to have too much draft strategy in one of these too early mocks, you know, Justin Mason will probably do his too early mocks again, probably sometime next month, or maybe, you know, around the time of the Arizona Fall League, something like that. It's hard to try to set ADP because we're not all using the same player pool. The beauty of having, like, knowing your format, you know, your site's player pool, like Yahoo, ESPN, is you can start to get some idea of when guys are going to be willing to take players. Yes, people will jump off script, but often they're going to rank, like, they're going to sort the players based on the ranks in the site, right? Either the pre-ranks or, you know, projections or whatever. So, or they'll sort by ADP, and, you know, because in a snake draft, you're trying to get the best player for that particular pick, right? Mm-hmm. So you might have a player, your projections might say that Kyle Tucker is going to be better than Manny Machado. But if the ADP shows that Manny Machado goes, you know, quite a while after Kyle Tucker, then you take Tucker first, even though you think Machado's better, right? Like, that's just a little bit of game, you know, a little bit of the strategy you're working with. With a too early mock, we don't have that. We have no idea where other people are ranking guys,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's a real free-for-all, and it forces you to pick players just based on who you think is best, which you'd think is our normal draft strategy, but it just isn't, right? Like, there are guys that we take in the 10th round more than we like more, and we like them more than our 8th round pick. And that's because you wanted this closer, and they go early, so you take them early, right? Mm-hmm. Even though you like this other guy better. It's hard. You can't really do that in here, so you get a good sense of players that, especially towards the end of this draft, you get a sense of players that people are really willing to take risks on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the next round had several players that were really hard to value for next season.
Right.
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 You know,
the next round starts with Bobby Witt Jr., the second, other than Julio Rodriguez, the second rookie taken, shortstop, obviously, for the Royals. It's kind of interesting now when you look at the juxtaposition. You have real young Bobby Witt Jr. and senior citizen Max Scherzer taken by you with the next pick. Right?
And I was thrilled to get Scherzer there, by the way, especially in shallower leagues like this. I knew I'd be taking some, you know, two more pitchers in this draft, just because I went two hitters early, so I was going to need some pitching depth. But when you drafting Max Scherzer, and, you know, to a lesser extent, a guy that's taken later this round, like, it's okay to know you're not getting 160 innings, right? Because 120 elite innings, especially in a, you know, in a 12 team league where there's decent replacement levels out there, go get the quality of inning, right? If he misses, you know, if he misses all of May, who cares? Right? Because he's Max Scherzer all the other times, especially in a head to head format where he's winning new matchups every single week. Right, like every week he's active, he's winning you matchups because he's that good. So you know, I was really thrilled to make that pick in the third round. Like that is my ace.
Yep, Byron Buxton was taken with the third pick in the third round. A little early, you think? I mean, this is the first season that he's really been healthy. Thankfully, I was just looking at his stats, batting .219, plenty of home runs, 26 home runs. Stolen bases are a lot less than we'd like to see. He only has three. You think that jump the gun? Oh, let's see who made, should we say who made that pick? Estavo Maximo.
Yeah. So here's the thing with the Buxton pick. It's that, like, it's really hard not to be super excited about this guy's upside. Mm-hmm. 82 games. So, you know, just about half a season, 26 home runs, despite the fact that, you know, he's striking out 30% of the time and only hitting .219. So, like, we know there's more to this bat than this. Like, we saw it last year. He only played 61 games, but he hit .306 and every bit of it was legit, right? Buxton isn't the big stolen base threat. And, you know, he's going to, you know, in five games, he'll have played more games in a single season than he has since 2017. But, like, what you have to know about Byron Buxton is, like, he's going to play like 120 games, 125 games, and hit like 30, almost 40 home runs. Right. So, like, he's one of these guys. It's really hard to draft, like, where to value this point in the season, because if he plays 120 games, you get a full season worth of stats, right? It's just like Max Scherzer this way. You can get a full season of stats in three quarters of a season. So where do you rank that? Right. And the more shallow the league, the more you can push him up your board versus a 15 team with five outfielders. That gaping hole that Byron Buxton is going to leave in your lineup for 30 games is really hard to fill. Right. I mean, it's the same issue that Bristow has later this round with Mike Trout. Right. We just don't know how often, like, you know, what'll change Byron Buxton's draft value a lot is just being healthy the rest of this season. When we finally see a triple digit number in games played, that's going to matter, right? That's going to alter projections for him because playing time is really hard to project. So, you know, another guy taken in this round, Ozzie Albies, right? He's got double risk, right? Because is he going to be healthy? Probably. But then will he not stink? Cause he was not good before he went down. Right. So, like, there's so much risk that you have to try to analyze at this point in the draft. And it's just what you will see, like, yes, Byron Buxton probably taken a little early, but not indefensible, right? And there's so many realities where he has a hot month. He hits 10 home runs in September, which is far from improbable, right? Like, it's very plausible he could do that. And all of a sudden he's got, you know, we look at the stat sheet and say, oh, look at that, 40 home runs in 120 games.
Yeah. Like, then I'm still a little disappointed in the stolen bases. And I know you say he's not really a stolen base guy. I think at one point he had 29 one season. If you look at his 162 game average, it's 21. Look, he's getting a little older. He's 28 years old. You know, fair to say he's been injury prone for his career. I'd like to see a few more stolen bases out of him, but we'll see. Let's move on a little bit. He was the 27th pick overall, 28th pick overall. Max Fried, you talked about Ozzie Albies at 29th. Alek Manoah, the 30th pick. sixth pick in the third round. I really wanted him. I think that he's going to end up maybe even next season in DeGrom and Scherzer territory in terms of production. But the next pick specifically, which was Austin Bristow's, the second, his pick, Mike Trout with the seventh pick in the third round. Some comments were made. This was on Reddit, and that they were afraid. Some people were afraid of using a third round pick on Mike Trout, this new diagnosis of the spinal injuries. You know, he's going to be back supposedly, but it's a rare back condition. But leading up to this draft, and he's on the IL now, 270, 24 home runs, 51 RBI, no stolen bases, which we know he's not going to run anymore, but that's through 79 games. So a little trepidation on people who are viewing this draft.
Yeah, sure. I get it. But, Mike Trout, the Millville Meteor, he came out and talked about this diagnosis, and he says, look, you guys are blowing this out of proportion. Like, yeah, it is, but like,
that's what people do.
Yeah. But, he kind of said, it's not like he needs some kind of like crazy surgery that's experimental. Mm-hmm. He just is going to have to manage it, right? And like, guys can manage injury. Clayton Kershaw has had back issues for years. And like, no, he doesn't play full seasons anymore, but you're telling me he's not a useful fantasy player, right? Like, he manages a condition, right?
Yeah.
Obviously it can go wrong. We've seen guys like Christian Yelich really struggle to manage some of these conditions, and maybe that's having an impact on his ability to get the ball in the air.
Take a look at Don Mattingly's career too, but go ahead. I know he's an older player.
Right. But the thing is, we don't know when that fall off is going to start happening.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like Mike, again, this is another example of, especially in a 12 team league, Mike Trout what is he? He's played 79 games, about half a season. Mm-hmm. And he's got 24 home runs. How many games does he need to get to 30? Right. 100 maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what if you get a 120 game season out of Mike Trout? That means he misses a month and a half of action. You still get 120 games, and he can still be a 35 home run player.
Yeah. Or even if he comes back, like you said, let's say if he really stays out until September 1st, he could still hit 30 home runs. You tell me he can't hit 6 home runs if he's healthy in the month of September? Come on.
And it's not like this sudden rare back condition just appeared. Mm-hmm. He's been dealing with it. It's just a recent diagnosis, right? The condition isn't new.
Mm-hmm. But in the end, when you hear it described as a rare spinal disease, that kind of scares you. And it depends on your tolerance for risk. That's it. I mean, I don't think we could say that, look, he's a lock for 35 home runs and a 290 batting average every season. He probably can and will put up those kind of numbers. But look, he's got a condition that he needs to manage for the rest of his career. This doesn't just go away. So I can understand being a little nervous about it.
That's a great risk point, Joe, because, when you look at this draft, part of what you're also trying to practice in these early mocks is roster construction.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons Austin's able to make that Mike Trout pick is, number one, he probably doesn't think Mike Trout will make it back to him. Number two, he took Juan Soto and Sandy Alcantara already, two very safe playing time.
Very, guys, yes.
Right? Super yes. Safe. So he can take that one risk. And then, obviously Tim Anderson hadn't hurt himself yet, and I don't want to mm-hmm. give away the title, but he takes Tim Anderson and Ketel Marte, two guys that do play a lot. Right. Even if I don't love the Ketel Marte pick, he's covering. He is outfield eligible, and he is covering for a lot of that risk. Mm-hmm. He was willing to take that risk because almost certainly Austin felt comfortable with the fact that he already taken very safe picks and that he had more safe picks he wanted to make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great point. Eighth pick of the third round, Matt Olson. Ninth pick, Carlos Rodon, who could be a free agent at the end of this season. He could opt out. Dansby Swanson, I really wanted him. Right? You just look at the numbers. This is a former first-round pick. He's in his upper 20s now, I think 27, 28 years old, really coming into his own. And then Jacob deGrom with the 11th pick of the third round. I love Jacob deGrom, but I am risk averse. I'm probably going to stay away from Mike Trout unless I could get him, you know, later than the third round. And I'm going to stay away from Jacob DeGrom too, just because, like I said, that's just me. You know, I'm like I said, I am risk averse. But I was very happy to pick up Dylan Cease with the 12th pick of the third round. And like I said, I really wanted Dansby Swanson. But, you know, and I've been one of Francisco Lindor's biggest of critics. But when you look at what he's done, even recently, I think he's batting like close to 400 for the past month. And, you know, he's a 25 to 30 home run guy with, you know, 20 steal potential. To get him with the first pick in the fourth round, for me, it was a no-brainer.
He's really given us a short memory, because even as early as like, as well as recently as like May of this year, he was an absolute roller coaster. Mm-hmm. He'd be hot for 2 weeks, then be ice cold for 2 weeks, and then he was okay for 2 weeks. Like, it was all over the place. And he's really been a high level player for, you know, for over a month now, which is great. But, you know, with as far as risk aversion goes, again, you know, Anthony Tucker's the one who takes DeGrom. What's tricky there is that he takes him as his ace. So, you know, he's forcing himself to pick at least one, if not, you know, I might have even advised him to take two more pitchers this, you know, in this little 6-round set. And because that's what I did when I took Scherzer. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Jacob DeGrom going at the end of the third round, I mean, with the way he just looked in his last start, this might be the latest he goes in any draft for the rest of time. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, because again, we've seen him be a top 15 pitcher in 110 innings. Like, he ended the season as a top 15 pitcher, like borderline top 10 in 110 innings. And that's if you don't count in the replacement value of whatever you started while he was on the IL.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, he's insane. I mean, what he does when healthy, I mean, yes, there's a lot of risk is all entirely what this decision is, but mm-hmm. there's a reason you're willing to take the risk, and it's because you watched him pitch recently.
Right.
Right. The guy's on, I mean, he's, when he's on and healthy, he just looks unhittable.
Yep. So my pick was the 37th pick of Francisco Lindor, Corey Seager with the 38th pick, Zach Wheeler, 39th pick overall, Jose Abreu, 40th pick overall. That first base position kind of dries up, like it sneaks up on you the way it dries up. So that is the 40th pick. 41st is Jazz Chisholm. 42nd pick, Tim Anderson, Joe Musgrove. Let's see. What pick was he? 37, 38, 39, 40, 41, 42, 40, 43rd, 44th, Tommy Edman. And Ethan got a little grief about his Tommy Edman pick.
Yeah, because he's kind of a one. I mean, he's more of just a steals guy. I'm not a huge fan of the pick, but I, you know, especially when you're looking at like roto leagues, I could see why you do it, right? Because he's going to be a 10 to 15 home run, 30 stolen base guy, which is cool. Right. Mm-hmm. And granted, he, you know, it's slowed, you know, some of it is slowed down a bit lately. Right. So that's the other thing. Like, recency bias is going to be a big, big deal. Right. He's hitting 227 since the All-Star break with only two stolen bases. So like, he's cold right now. The plate discipline is still good. That, I mean, that's important. Guys will slump. Anyone can be good or bad for 50 plate appearances. And that's what you're seeing right now. He's struggling a little right now, but he's going to be, you know, he's going to be a versatile player. You can play him all over the middle infield. He might, you know, in some formats, he'll get some corner, you know, and he'll steal some bases for you.
Exactly. Anywhere between 20 and 30. And that's, I think, where he gets, you know, most of his fantasy value. After Tommy Edman, Aaron Nola, Nolan Arenado having himself a year. Then you went with Julio Urias. So you went Scherzer and then Urias. And the fourth round was finished off with Xander Bogaerts. When we were chatting, I was a little surprised at how much his power has tailed off so far this season, but still batting for high average and likely to opt out as well. And fifth round is opened up with Kyle Schwarber. Again, super power hitter, just doesn't hit for average anymore. And then you went with Josh Hader with your fifth pick. Did you plan on taking a closer, you know, this early?
Not necessarily a closer, but like I said, when I took Max Scherzer, I said, I know I have to address my pitching risk, mm-hmm. right? I was thrilled that Julio Urias was available at that time, because what people are noticing is the velo's back up and he's been lights out.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I mean, he's walking less than 1/9 over his last 5 starts. And one of those is a 2-inning start, but his last 4, if you just look at him, 7 innings, 6 innings, 7 innings, 6 innings, he's given up a total of 3 earned runs across those starts, striking out plenty of guys, no home runs over his last 3 because the velo's back up. I mean, he's just doing everything you want to see. He looks as good, you know, almost as ever, right? Mm-hmm. Like the strikeouts aren't quite there, but this is a sub-3 ERA guy who I think by the end of the season will have another 160 inning season, right?
Yep.
And that's huge, right? Like that makes all that risk with Max Scherzer is now like I'm mitigating a ton of it because I've got a real safe pick. And then with Josh Hader, I'm adding on more innings. He's going to throw, obviously going to San Diego is huge. One of my favorite guys, Mikey Ahedo, has just recently written a piece that says maybe something's wrong with Josh Hader, but even if he's right, I'm taking on some risk there, but again, elite strikeouts, elite ratios, mitigating risk from Scherzer, at least from a volume perspective.
Right. Right. Bo Bichette went after Hader, third pick in the 5th round. I was very high on Bichette to start the season. Seems to be warming up a little bit now. I think over his last week or two, he's batting close to 300, but so far a little bit disappointed. DJ LeMahieu back to, what he did a couple seasons ago, except the home run power really hasn't returned, but getting on base, getting hits, high batting average. He was the 4th pick in the 5th round. And Andrés Giménez, having a real good year, but a little surprised to see him go this early.
Yeah, I was really surprised because it's not a lot of loud stuff, but he will flirt with probably 2020 this season. Mm-hmm. I don't think he gets there. I think he falls just short of both. He's going to be something like 17-17 or 18-18, something like that. But he's a, he's a high contact player. His last 160 games, what you're seeing is actually more of like I think he's got 17 home runs and 23 steals. The batting average has looked so much better this year. So that's huge. I mean, he's a great versatile asset. I think, again, this is maybe a little early for me, but what do I know? That certainly looks like, certainly a decent pick at a position where we haven't seen very many of them go.
Right.
Right. If you look at this draft board, second basemen just don't go early, especially now that we had so long without seeing Ozzie Albies. Mm-hmm. He used to be that one second baseman that was up there. That's just not where he is right now. So
Andrés Giménez going before Brandon Lowe. Interesting, right? I know that Lowe has missed a ton of time this season on the IL, but interesting to see that. 5th pick of the 5th round. And Shelley follows that up with Marcus Semien, who really got off to a disastrous start, but has been red hot for the past well over a month now. Not going to be a 40 home run guy anymore, in my opinion, but a 25-20 guy going forward, yeah, I could see that happening.
Yeah, I mean, this season it might even be better. He could be better than that, right? Mm-hmm. He could be 25. 25-25, mm-hmm. and another surge like we've seen. A lot of these projections are sort of averaging out what he was a little earlier and a little later. If he keeps being this crazy exceptional player that he's been, what's really funny is his early season was so bad that his WRC plus is still under 100, right? His batting average is still 240. His OBP is still under 300. His slugging is still under 400. Mm-hmm. That's how bad he was earlier this season. So I think the closer we get to the end of the season and the further we get from the beginning of this season, the earlier he goes in drafts.
Yeah. Next pick is the first catcher off the board. I'm sorry. Next pick is Kevin Gausman. That's the 7th pick of the 5th round. Then we get the first catcher, Alejandro Kirk, the 8th pick of the 5th round. Next catcher taken, next round, Will Smith. What do you think about Kirk going as the first catcher overall?
You know, I, in years past, we've all been very big on like, oh yeah, there's some catchers that are, you know, that matter more, right? Because there's like, we've had historic, you know, the last several years, we've had these like elite catchers at the top and then a big swath of nothing, right? But one, what I didn't love about this pick, like since the All-Star break, Alejandro Kirk, he's got 59 plate appearances. The plate discipline is awesome. It's 1-1 with walks and strikeouts. I love that. What I don't love is a .220 batting average and a .300 slugging, right? He's got one double, one home run, three runs, and three RBI, despite hitting third the entire time for the Blue Jays. That means he's not making he's not making enough good contact. I'm not super thrilled about that. And I think there's a big, you know, on my hitter list, you'll find a big glut of catchers altogether, right? Like one of the guys rising the most on the hitter list when it comes out is Adley Rutschman, because he's been unbelievable in the second half, right? I mean, he's one of the best hitters of the second half. So I think the more good catchers that come up, it doesn't mean a bunch of catchers move up our draft boards. It actually helps us move catchers down, because the replacement level for catcher gets higher and higher the more of these catchers that break out, right? Like, why spend an early round pick on him when you can stream guys like Jonah Heim all year long, right? Like, catcher streaming is just so, it's much more viable now than it's been in recent history. And the top tier of catching is now not, it used to be one or two guys, right? JT Realmuto and Will Smith. JT Realmuto, Will Smith. And for a little while, there was like when Gary Sanchez was good, there was an argument that he was a top two or three catcher and you needed his power. But there's a bunch of catchers who can hit now, even with Yasmani Grandal being an absolute afterthought in fantasy.
Keibert Ruiz from the Nationals, too.
He just hit a home run today.
Yeah, he hit two.
Oh God. Yeah. So, and he's a guy who I think has a great hit tool that I think really could develop. And, you know, maybe next year's his year. I think he'll be a sleeper next year for sure. But like, there's a lot of good catchers.
Sleeper, but he's going to be highly sought after.
Yeah. So, you know, with this, you know, in a two catcher league, this makes a little more sense. I don't hate valuing Alejandro Kirk as the number one catcher, especially because he hits third right now for the Blue Jays. But again, because there's so many good catchers, I feel like the drop between picking one this stage in the draft and picking one seven rounds later, I just don't think you're going to see the drop there that you've seen in recent years. And because of that, it's not that I don't like the pick of Kirk. It's that I don't think you need to address catcher early anymore.
Right. So Kirk, eighth pick of the fifth round, followed that up with Jose Altuve, Starling Marte, Brandon Woodruff. And then I took my second pitcher, and I want to try to make sure that I get someone with a high strikeout potential. Picked up the veteran Yu Darvish, who, I mean, in my opinion, you got to like what he's been doing now, and also just with the upgrades that the Padres have made. So I would think that he's going to have a nice season next year as well, as long as he stays healthy. And like I said, first base dries up a little bit. My sixth pick, which is the first pick of the sixth round, Josh Bell. And we follow that up with Will Smith, the second catcher taken, second pick of the sixth round. Cedric Mullins with the third pick of the sixth round. JD Martinez, another guy. Last I looked, he was hitting for decent average, but again, another guy whose power has kind of waned this season, no?
Yeah. I mean, it has, and that's a bummer, you know, but it's one of these things where I just believe so much in how good of basically a hitting coach he is that I think that there's, you know, he's practically a hitting coach. I think that there's something there. We've seen him struggle before for extended times, JD Martinez. So he'll be fine. I do think he'll eventually be fine, but that's what's hard about making these picks at this stage, because a hot September for a lot of these players really changes their draft value. You wouldn't think that, you just want it the way I say it, but it absolutely does, because what we see in September tends to feel a little more meaningful than what we saw the previous March, right? Like Yu Darvish right now on the season, his K per nine, which is a flawed stat for several reasons. It can be easily inflated and deflated. But with Yu Darvish, it looks like it's under a strikeout and inning this season. You're like, oh, what's up with that? Well, since July 1st, it's like 11 and a half, 12 guys per nine, right? And even since, it's over a batter and inning since June 1st, right? Because rolling charts do a really good job telling that kind of story. He did have a little bit of a strikeout lull, but then when you look, he's back on the upswing on that rolling strikeout rate because he's just finding that. So I thought the Yu Darvish pick was a great pick because, again, we're all kind of like a little at a disadvantage because sometimes all we can see, like all we have time to look at is the full season stat, which just isn't a great story. It's an overall outcome. It's an averaging, but it gets rid of a lot of the most useful information, which was what were the peaks? What were the valleys? How long did they last?
Right.
I mean, even when you look at Trevor Story, the few good things in his stat line right now come from 2 weeks, two amazing weeks.
Yep.
And that's it. Right. And like, I'm hoping that he has another two amazing weeks like that. And it's all he needs to level out the season because that, you know, he's my last pick in this draft, but like
he had 7 home runs in that 2 week span. Might have even been 1 week where he hit those 7 home runs.
Yeah,
I think he had one game where he hit 3 home runs.
Yeah, he's just got that kind of upside. But I thought a lot of the picks here in this range were pretty stable, pretty safe. I was a little worried about Starling Marte. He's not stealing bases at all like what we saw in Oakland because nobody can. Mm-hmm. His pace in Oakland was unbelievable. When you like, again, looking at his rolling charts or looking at his splits, you'll see that like his stolen bases come in big bunches and he's just not running as much right now. So that really hampers his value. So I think it'll be interesting to see how projections play that out. Cause that's the other thing we don't have the advantage of. There's only one projection system right now that has anything out for next season and it's Zips. Cause they always do like 3 years coming up, but it's not like they're fine tuning it like constantly. Mm-hmm. Right. It's largely based on the last 3 seasons. So it's really hard to, you know, take too much from it, but Starling Marte is a guy who I think is going to be projected for more steals than he gets because his, you know, because of the history. But I think recently we're seeing something maybe a little more true. I also, I think Josh Bell, your other pick, that value can change a lot in a hurry over what happens over these last 2 months.
Sure.
Right. Because there's a lot of realities where this looks like a giant steal, right? And there's other realities where this looks about right. I don't really think it gets much worse than this because like you said, first base is a cliff and I think you got the last one, but I would say like that value could change a lot. He could move up 1 or 2 rounds just from having a hot month or two. And I know I keep repeating that, but like that's so important right now when if you're thinking about, this guy's a keeper for me next year. No, you mean he's probably, the first 3-4 round guys are probably all keepers. If you have some crazy value, like if Andrés Giménez is a 26th round keeper for you like that, go ahead and write that in, right? Whether or not you can quibble with where Ethan took him in this draft, if you have him as like a 26th round keeper, like you're just keeping him. Mm-hmm. But a lot of these guys are going to see significant value changes in the next month. And
it's
difficult to identify who they'll be. Mm-hmm. Ketel Marte could be one of them. Right. I think that Spencer Strider could definitely be one of them.
Yeah. Spencer Strider with the 5th pick in the 6th round. Ketel Marte, 7th pick in the 6th round. Edwin Diaz, 8th pick of the 6th round. Usually, once Hader goes, Liam Hendricks would go, but he's had his issues this year with injuries, and Diaz has just been amazing. And it hurts me to say that as a Yankee fan. Yeah, as a Yankee fan, I think I should be patted on the back. I took a Red Sox and I took a Met. How about that?
We're all real proud of you, Joe.
Thank you.
But with Edwin Diaz, I think if we knew that he was like re-signing with the Mets or somebody good, which he probably will, but if we knew that for sure, I think he goes around earlier.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt about it. But and he goes wherever Hader goes, right? Or maybe even before. He's been better, right? Especially these last 2 seasons. He's been amazing. But
we fantasy managers, creatures of habit. I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's almost like automatic that Hader's going to go first.
Yeah, just but because like if this is the floor, so be it. It's still 30 saves.
Yeah.
Whereas Edwin Diaz's floor is probably really safe, but as recently as 3 or 4 years ago, he did have times where he just totally fell off the wagon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So we finish off the last 5 picks. So we've got 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Logan Gilbert, 8th pick of the 6th round. George Springer, 9th pick of the 6th round. Justin Verlander, I guess that Tommy John surgery gave him some, like a couple extra years of, Hall of Fame kind of numbers because he's having an amazing season. He went next. And then Scott Chute. You're Scott Chu, right? You took Trevor Story with the 2nd-to-last pick in the 6th round. And then Adolis Garcia finished off the 6th round. outfielder for the Rangers.
Yeah, and every day I like my Trevor Story pick less and less, but so be it. I actually really wanted Justin Verlander. I thought Estevao made a really nice pick there because like it's not like they're going to baby the guy or rest his arm. They literally will, like, Justin
Verlander. He won't let them anyway.
No, he'll demand like to Scherzer. Pitch until that arm falls off.
Right.
Right, and he's doing so at an elite level. He's maybe pitching a little above his head right now, but I'd be happy to take that gamble anyway. Adolis Garcia is someone who's really interesting because last year he had a terrible second half and he's not off to a great start in this second half. But if he shows any signs of life, I mean, obviously the power and speed upside is, you know, it's elite, right? I mean, it's way up there. Like we talked about Andrés Giménez being a 2020 guy. We talked about Semien being a 25-25 guy. Like someone like Adolis Garcia, if you just, he's going to have, it feels like he's going to have a 30-30 season. This one magical 30-30 season might come with like a 240 batting average, but who cares?
Right.
Right. Because he could still be 30-30. And the problem is like, you know, managing that's going to be a big pain in the butt, right? Brett Goldhammer didn't do himself a lot of favors getting two very streaky players at the end of his draft with Schwarber and Garcia. But I think he'll find a way to manage. You know, another thing in this whole draft that I thought was interesting was we saw, you know, several teams had three outfielders. And I will say this, it shouldn't matter that much, but in a standard Yahoo format where there are only three outfielders, you can easily justify taking three outfielders in your first six picks. But I'll tell you, it's actually pretty hard to construct your team very well that way because like there's so many good outfielders available later on because after we all fill our three infield spots, we're not taking outfielders as often. And there's still really good ones available late. So,
and that did affect my drafting too. Great point.
Yeah, and I mean, it doesn't seem like it'd be much, but it's definitely a big deal. It's why I wasn't that concerned with only taking one outfielder, and you are one of the, you know, there's a couple people that only took one outfielder.
Yeah.
And it's because, you realize you kind of don't need to. There's still, you know, I don't have
Shelly didn't take any outfielder. Yeah. Shelly, Ethan, didn't take any. Ethan and then, like you said, and also Jake and Dylan. Oh, no, Dylan had one. But like you said, in a league where you're starting only three outfielders, you could wait a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, just it's a really deep position. Whereas in a five outfield format, which is a very popular format that some of these guys are probably just more, men and women are probably more used to playing, three outfields in the first six picks is, you know, par for the course. Mm-hmm. It's normal because you have like a fifth outfielder can be hard to find.
Right.
Right. Yep. Like I try to stream them, but it's a streaming spot because it's not always worth it for me to draft them all.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that matters. It's also why I was willing to take so many more pitchers. The Yahoo format really drives you to take more pitchers. It really values pitchers more because there's not that many hitting spots.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Jose Ramirez is my third baseman. There's no corner infield. So I almost don't really have a need for another third baseman until Jose Ramirez is hurt.
Right.
I don't have to start any more of them. Right. Which is good because third base is a hard spot to fill.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, Estevao, he has two third basemen. And he was kind of hesitant to do it. I know because he was talking to me about it, but he got Austin Riley and Nolan Arenado. That thinned out the third base pool pretty like by a lot. And so some teams are going to have a hard time, but that'd be a bigger deal if this was a ESPN or NFBC or Fantrax style league that has third base and corner infield.
Right.
The size of the hitting, like the size of the hitting roster you have to carry can really impact what you're doing. In Yahoo, it's really hard to even keep bench hitters at all because of how much you need to stream, because of how much focus there is on pitching. Not because they necessarily score it higher, but it's because you just don't need that many hitters. And many times it's a very set and forget for, you know, eight of your 10 hitters that you start.
Yep.
So, but the pitching is that's where you're really burning and churning. So, you know, that's a big struggle. And that kind of roster construction, that's the other thing you're really practicing in these mocks. Mm-hmm. When you do these two early mocks, again, it's not about how good I feel about all my picks, right? I'm allowed to hate my Trevor Story pick, but I was right to think I need a middle infielder. And that was the best one I could think of, right? I just needed one. I felt, because I was trying to build a very specific kind of roster and I was able to touch all major positions, right? I got a corner. I got an outfielder. I got two starters. I got a reliever and I got a middle. Right. Like that's kind of where I wanted to be because now I'm not forcing myself to make any kind of picks later on.
It's also interesting that you got Story with one of the last picks of the sixth round last season. I think you would have had to invest a third round pick in him.
Oh, easily, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not like I think he's a worse player. I do think he's got some adjustments to make. I know this feeds that Colorado narrative, like, oh, when guys leave Colorado, they don't hit well. But like in the fourth round, Nolan Arenado went, and he looks just as good now. I mean, maybe a little less than he did in his prime, but his numbers would not be that much better in Colorado because of how bad his home road splits would be and how much he'd struggle on the road, because that's part of the Coors effect. So it's one of these things where, you know, obviously that was a gamble, but I wanted to take a middle infielder there because I wanted to be prepared to have a roster where I'm not forced to take picks, where I think some of these other managers two or three picks from now are really going to start feeling pressure where they have to reach because they need that certain position. And that's the last guy that's viable at that spot. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at, I don't mean to call them out like too much, and it's hard to know exactly what their philosophy was. And none of these picks were bad and on their own, but like with Brett Goldhammer, this would be a hard team to construct. I'm not saying he can't do it because he's got Shohei Ohtani. He can do whatever he wants, but he's got, shortstop. He's got two middle infielder, three outfield. He's got nobody at first and third. And we've seen a lot of first and third go, and those positions are not that deep at the top anymore.
His first base player.
Well, like but there's these big clips.
CJ Cron might be next.
Yeah, CJ Cron is probably next, but like there's a cliff. And Brett was probably going to feel a lot of pressure to take CJ Cron this next pick, even if he didn't value him there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because he's like, man, there's no, you look at the remaining first basemen that are of this caliber, they're just not there. And he's got a long way before those picks come back.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's going to be tough. So I would tell he's also going to feel pressure to take a pitcher, right? Because he's got Shohei, but he doesn't have any other ones. He's really going to. Yeah. So when you're doing these mocks, anyone, start doing mocks whenever you want, because part of the exercise isn't bragging about the team you picked. It's about how am I constructing rosters? Do I feel like some people say, oh, I like to do pocket aces. Okay. Do that a bunch of time in mocks, right? I don't get a lot of opportunity to talk about mocks on, August 9th of any particular year, but I'm doing it now. Right. Think about those things right now. If you're thinking about your keepers, think a little bit about that, right? Like, how does that make your team construction look going into the next draft? If you're in a rebuild right now, one thing you can be thinking about is not just keeper consolidation, but also how do you make sure you've got the most flexibility heading into your next draft, right? How do you make sure that not just that you have like the guys, you're only keeping late round picks, whatever. It's also, how do I make sure I don't have to reach in my draft early? You never want to be reaching in your first six picks. That's just not a good feeling.
Right.
You might reach a little bit because it's like the middle of the first and they're not coming back around.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like you might have to do that a little, but you don't want to be going like, oh man, I have to take a blank position here. You don't want to have to do that in the first six rounds. That's not a way to build a team. It's really hard to succeed that way. You can, but it's a whole lot harder. So, keep those in mind. Even as you're looking to your team next year in these keeper and dynasty leagues, start thinking about some of that now.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I think we've spent enough time. Thank everyone for sticking with us. This is an hour and a half, Scott Chu, that we've, had a lot of fun talking, mocking for the 2023 season. So I think that should slam the lid on things for today. Don't forget to follow me at Joe Galina. Follow that guy, Scott Chu, at If the Chew Fits, and the Hitter List is coming out Wednesday, right, Scott?
That's right. Sometime tomorrow afternoon. It's supposed to be 2 or 3 o'clock, but we'll see. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that again, the feature this week ranked at 105 will be Jorge Mateo. I really like what he's been doing. Not striking out nearly as much. Still got the power, still got the speed.
Yep.
He's really taken a shot up. So, I'm excited about that.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, a couple other players like moving up and down. I think there's going to be some fun things to check out there. But really, also just keep your eye on that taxi squad. You're really going to start seeing guys jump around more there, simply because at this point in the season, that taxi squad I keep on the site is really big. And one of the reasons for that is I don't know what your league circumstances are. I don't know what you actually need. So I am consciously, I'm putting notes on every guy in the taxi squad, because some of them are never going to be top 150 guys, but they are going to be valuable to you as a potential top 150 person for your team because of your needs. Mm-hmm. And if you look in those comments, I say, this is a speed streamer. This is a ratio streamer. This is a power streamer, right? Like that's where they are. That's what Franmil Reyes will be right now. right? I can't rank him in the top, you know, hard to rank him in the top 150 because of how bad he's been. And it's not like going to Chicago makes me feel a whole lot better. That's not been a good offense, but he's
a good ballpark to hit in.
Yeah. And that's a power streamer every time, right? Mm-hmm. We've seen players who have, you know, who've been a little behind their home run production, like Nick Castellanos, who has a much better hit tool than Franmil Reyes ever will. But we've seen Wrigley be a big power boost for guys, and it could well be for Franmil Reyes.
Yep. 0 for 2 with a strikeout so far.
Classic Franmil. There you go. All right. 50% strikeout rate. There you go, bud.
There you go. So, yeah, subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcast content. Leave us a nice review wherever you can. And as always, we hope that all of your fantasies become realities. And we'll see you next time.